The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Jason Fitz in for Max Kellerman. Some technical issues. I got to ask. We got Max. Max is going to hang out with us straight out of the gate. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests are going to join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. You guys can hang out with us. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll start with some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Max Kellerman on the phone with us. They say you're having technical issues. I don't know. It's the first day of football season. Are you sure that you just didn't need like a little extra grilling time, a little extra party time, Max? I mean, I get it.
Technically, the issue is I need to get the chips before. You know what? This keeps happening. Like this is it's like a Wi-Fi issue, I guess, in my neighborhood from an undisclosed location in New York City. So this has happened once on First Take. About a week ago, and now it's happened on the radio, and hopefully we get it all technically ironed out so it doesn't happen anymore. But thank you for pinch hitting. I appreciate it, brother.
Oh, man, thanks for having me in for you. I appreciate it. And obviously, we got a lot to get to, and I'll keep ribbing you about the Wi-Fi issues. But more importantly, obviously, there was a lot of NBA action last night. And I want to start with this Raptors-Celtics series because I have this theory, Max. I have this theory that NBA fans are so worried about what's coming next, whether it's free agency in next season or the Western Conference Finals, the NBA Finals. Everybody's so worried about what's coming next that we stop enjoying the right now. We got a crazy double overtime game against the Raptors-Celtics. I mean, Twitter was blowing up. Everybody was blowing up. It was electric. To me, these are the moments coming off of like we underappreciated Jazz Nuggets. Now it feels like we're underappreciating Raptors, Celtics. Like, what has stood out to you in that series that you didn't expect?
Well, first, your theory. I don't know that I agree. I'd say that if anything, we're waiting for that Lakers-Clippers matchup in the Western Conference Finals. That may be what we're like looking for next, but I would say the bubble action, period, and you can even go back before the playoffs, has been amazing. The issue with the NBA, of course, and it's the reason I think it's the best team sport, it's one of the reasons, is that the best team always wins. It's not March Madness, one and done, where a lesser team might upset a better team on a given night. It's not football or baseball, where there are just so many parts, right, that a whistle here or a hot starting pitcher there, and the lesser team advances past the better team. No, you can run all your plays through your best players. There aren't that many players on the field to play, so the kind of variables like that are lower than in the other sports. And you have seven games, best of seven series. So the better team always seems to advance. And that's great. But on the other hand, you know, in one way, like let's see who the best is. But on the other hand, it takes kind of the randomness out and diminishes the drama, like in the NFL or Major League Baseball even, or March Madness. And so this bubble has solved that because we've gotten some like freaky kind of results. Starting with the Bucks, by the way, who were no good in the bubble, right? And then you brought up the Denver-Utah series. That's as good a series as you're going to see in the first round. Are you kidding me? So I don't think that if there's any kind of sense like, let's look forward, let's see what's coming next, I think it might be the LeBron-Kawhi Lakers-Clippers matchup in the Western Conference Finals. But all I know is on this show every day, I like can't believe, even when I'm reading the promos, how much great stuff there is to look forward to, including a double overtime win by the defending champs to force a game seven. It's amazing.
Well, and you're right. I mean, and I think the LeBron conversation and the way it always plays forward to Kawhi is a little bit of what's on my mind because I felt like, in general, the NBA community, of which, you know, I love the sport as much as everybody, I think part of the NBA community didn't necessarily celebrate the first round as much as I wanted or the second round as much as I wanted with this particular series. Now, I'm curious because I kept watching the end of that game in double overtime and thinking about this thing we always hear about, Max. You always hear about the DNA, the culture, the understanding of what it takes to win, which is a little foreign to me because, let's face it, everybody that gets to the NBA is there because they're great at what they do, and they've presumably won at a lot of levels. But I couldn't help last night but looking at this thinking, man, the Raptors have it in their DNA, which is the most cliched thing in the world to say. But when you see the way that game played out, it's what I felt watching it.
Yeah, well, first of all, that starts with the coach. Really, even the GM or the president of operations, right? You can even go all the way to ownership because a fish rots from the head down, but you establish the culture that way too. Masai Ujiri was a great GM when he was in Denver, right? Like, it's the old Hoosiers thing. Look, same dimension, same from the free throw line, the Gene Hackman speech and all, but no. like you really can't take how do you exploit a home court in basketball the way you can in baseball? Short right field porch, load with left-handed hitters. Football, you have a dome, you get an accurate quarterback, right? Like there are all kinds of where you play on turf, you do. There are different ways to exploit home court. Masai realized in Denver, I'm going to get a team 10 deep and run everyone out the gym because of the thin air, right? And then he goes to Toronto, builds another deep team, and actually lands Kawhi and wins a championship. So it starts with Masai, goes down to Nick Nurse, who is unafraid. Stephen A. brought it up today on First Take. Box and one, does it on Steph Curry, does it on whoever he needs to. Kemba Walker dares Tatum and Jaylen Brown to beat him. Goes... really tightens the rotation seven deep, but in fact, in a way, it was almost like a six-man rotation in the sense that Nick Nurse recognized, he had the guts to recognize, wait a minute, Tayus is a really good player. I think he's an above-average center for sure, and one of the reasons the Celtics are really good. But offensively, those bigs on the Celtics couldn't score on Toronto, right? They weren't afraid of them offensively. So you can limit Ibaka and Gasol, And those two guys can kind of combine to get the minutes of one player. I mean, it's a lot of minutes, double overtime game. And then otherwise, if you think of those as one guy, then otherwise there are only five other players who really got minutes. So he really tightened the rotation, went small ball with Anunoby at five. And when you think about Anunoby, last year it wasn't like, oh, there's Siakam and then every... No, it was you have two young, talented, ascending forwards, Anunoby and Siakam. Anunoby just happened to get hurt, right? He had a medical issue. So, and Siakam played out of his mind in the playoffs. But no, Anunoby was supposed to be a younger, more athletic Draymond Green kind of player. And I think that him playing the five really, it turned them into a kind of a Warrior-style lineup. The difference being, and I talked about this on First Take today too, Steph shoots from so far away, it gives a guy like Draymond Green, who's just willing to shoot, even if he's not a good shooter, amazing amounts of time, right? Rotations come from farther away and all that, and so he has time to shoot. It makes him a better shooter. Anunoby doesn't get that from Kyle Lowry, who had a great game, but Anunoby has a quick release and is also unafraid. So suddenly you're playing in this five-out or small ball-ish lineup that really works, and so that DNA you're talking about, I think, is about a coach who is unafraid to try things. And unlike guys like Budenholzer and a few others who you're like, these are really good coaches, but where's the urgency in the playoffs? This guy seems to get that.
Yeah, he's preaching truth. It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz in for Max, but Max is on the phone with me. And Max, you make a great point because we talk so much about what home court advantage means in the NBA playoffs and how it wouldn't be there in the bubble. I think the thing that has surprised me the most that I don't know a lot of us anticipated was how clear it would become that certain coaches are just better than other coaches. And we undervalue coaching in the NBA. We've seen it in that series. So let's go to the other series. Obviously, last night, the Clippers get the big win, 96-85 over the Nuggets. They now take a commanding 3-1 series lead. I guess I sort of expected it, Max. I guess I expected the Clippers to come out and be exactly what they were last night. I expected Kawhi to come out and be dominant. And as good as I think the Nuggets have the potential to be, they're just up against a team that, quite simply, is better than they are.
Well, I agree with that. But I think that, and by the way, if you have a seven-game series in the previous round, that's on you, right? Like, Clippers handled business. On the other hand, the Clippers handled business because Porzingis wasn't there. Like, when Porzingis got ejected that game, then the Clippers took over. And until he didn't play, through those games that he did play, the conclusion you draw is the Mavs were better than the Clippers, I think. And I picked the Clippers since the beginning of the season. Mavs were my sleeper team, but I like the Clippers since the Kawhi move. I thought, okay, they're going to win the championship, and I haven't moved off that. Still, they were fortunate not to have a more extended series, more protracted series. But, okay, that's part of it. Luck is part of it, and this is what I mean by randomness in the bubble, right? This is a little different than it normally is. So the Nuggets get extended seven. The Clippers are sitting there waiting for them. And that first loss, I thought you made a very good point when you talked about coaching, because home court means much less right now. It doesn't really mean anything, in fact. Who has home court? Nobody. So instead of going in, I think Nate Duncan or someone tweeted about this, or maybe Kirk Goldsberry tweeted about, instead of going into games where the home court, the team with the home court has an 80% chance to win the closeout game or whatever it is, oh no, wait, this is a 50-50 style game. There's no real home court or road losses. However, the Nuggets had a schedule loss the game one. That was a schedule loss. And that kind of changed the complexion of the series, I think. I expected this to go at least six games. But when you have, like, no, they were exhausted, and the Clippers were fresh. And I didn't read too much into that. Since then, it's 1-1. You know, since then, the Nuggets are really, I don't consider them out of this. I think they can get another game from the Clippers. All that said, Jokic and Jamal Murray are an excellent pair. Michael Porter Jr. is obviously a player, although his post-game comments have to be troubling if you're a Nuggets fan. Talking about, well, as they're running the offense through those two guys, it's like, hold on, young blood, you're a little bit out of line there. You're in the playoff series. And by the way, you only have two assists in, like, the whole series. Like, calm down. And so maybe that's part of growing pains. But the bottom line is the Clippers have who I consider the best player in the world. The reigning and defending, finals MVP, but more than finals MVP, the whole postseason MVP from last year. And I think that's the difference, really.
Well, you mentioned that Kawhi has 292 points in this postseason. That's the most in the first 10 games of a single postseason in Clippers history. But it's looked at times, I think, a little easier in the bubble for the Clippers than I expected, honestly, Max. Not because the Clippers aren't great, but because they just didn't get a lot of time together during the regular season. And,
exactly.
You know, that to me was going to be a factor. And it really hasn't been because Kawhi has been so spectacular. I mean, I'm looking at it, and if I'm the Nuggets, I'm looking at it and say, man, I'm giving them everything I got. I just don't have as many bullets in the chamber. And no matter, I don't want to oversimplify, and I understand that it's more complicated than this, but it feels like at some level in the bubble, the simplest truth is that the best team, to your point, is going to win these series. So that's why it becomes easier to look at it and say, okay, Clippers are going to take on the Lakers, because in my mind, those two teams are clearly the best teams in the West. And as gutsy as the performance has been at times, and as much fun as I think the Nuggets are to watch, they just feel like they're one or two pieces away from really being able to contend in this series.
Yeah, or one or two years away, maybe, with That's the pieces fair. They have, more or less. I would say no. In fact, I think there's more randomness injected into this postseason because of the bubble and because of the stopping of play. In other words, I think that the best team doesn't necessarily win, although every playoff series, every postseason in the NBA, we talk ourselves into thinking this team or that team has a chance, and in the end, 9 times out of 10, it's the exact teams we thought would be there in the end, right? So for about that, I agree. And usually those teams have an MVP-caliber player on them, and sometimes two. And I think the question for the Clippers is, will Paul George ever show up, even if he's not really a five-star player, will he show up as a four-and-a-half-star player? You know, will he show up as an all-star plus? And he has not really done that. He's a couple games here and there, but a lot of good players can do that. He has not shown up as a bona fide, if not MVP, at least above an average all-star in these playoffs. And I think Kawhi is going to need him to do that to beat the Lakers, even though Zubac and obviously Patrick Beverley and Montrez and you know, they got that, obviously Lou Williams, they have ballers on the team and good defenders on the team and a championship coach. But what do you know, like, Kawhi is going to need his Robin, because over on the Lakers, it's Batman and Batman. You know, like, LeBron James has a guy as good as him.
Well, and you're not wrong about it. You just mentioned Lou Williams, by the way. I want you to hear this, because I have a question for you about it, Max. This is Lou Williams, Clippers guard. This was courtside on SportsCenter with SVP last night, talking about how the team feels right now.
We knew this year, with the way this team was built, we've been a confident group throughout this whole season. Tonight it showed. Our offense was failing us. We didn't have a great shooting night, but we hung our hats on the defensive end, and that's been our makeup. That's going to have to be our makeup going into the next game. So we smell blood. I'm sure those guys are going to fight like crazy, like I said, to try to go get a game, but we're going to fight as well.
In life, Max, a few years ago, a friend told me that momentum is one of the most difficult things to get in life, and it's one of the easiest things to lose. And in sports, I feel like confidence is in that same sort of category. When you're a team as talented as the Clippers, what I struggle to find from this is, knowing that they have that confidence and they smell blood, I'm not sure what the Nuggets can really do to change that. Even if they win a game out of this series, to your point, even if they can take another game, there's just a different level of confidence from the Clippers. And when they're already a better team, I don't know how the Nuggets sort of surpass that.
Well, one of the issues the Nuggets are going to have, and this is one of the reasons I think I'm into basketball. It's one of the reasons basketball is a barbershop sport, along with boxing, is that, and when people even talk NFL barbershop stuff, it's usually like quarterbacks or positional rivalries, right? Is because you can boil it down more easily to the story of the protagonist, of the most important piece. Among playoff teams with reasonably similar talent on each roster, the team with the best player almost always wins. Almost always. You know, going back to Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, you know, Chamberlain fans, I know Raj is a big Wilt Chamberlain fan. Oh, look at the team Bill Russell had. And it's true, Bill Russell did have better teams. But Chamberlain always played with all-stars. It's not like he was on bad teams. And the fact that Bill Russell's teams always won is the reason that Chamberlain isn't ranked higher on those lists and why Bill Russell is ranked so high. Because in the end, we really believe through experience watching the NBA that among similarly talented teams, you may argue that they weren't in Wilton Russell's case, whatever, the team with the best player won. It's the reason why Michael Jordan went 6-0 in the finals. You know, it's the reason that you just believe LeBron's team's always going to be there. And it's the reason that the Warriors needed to do a cheat code. They needed to add Kevin Durant to a 73-win team to win, because you looked at Cleveland, you said, no, if LeBron has some help, he's the best player. His team is going to win. And you can apply that to this series, too. The best player, I think, in the world is Kawhi Leonard. He and LeBron will settle it in the Western Conference Finals. And apologies to Jamal Murray and Jokic and maybe Porter Jr., and they have other pieces, too. You know, and by the way, then even the pieces that might cancel those guys out on the Spurs, on the Clippers, like Patrick Beverley and, of course, Paul George, you know, et al. The bottom line is the team with Kawhi wins.
Max, I'm going to ask you to put your NBA, you know, history hat on and do a little speculation here for me. It's the Max Kellerman Show, by the way, on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason fits in for Max, but I'm on the phone with him right now. Given what you've said about home court and the lack of it here, do you believe the playoffs would have played out the same way to where we are right now if we weren't in a bubble?
Yes, that's a really good question. If we weren't in a bubble, in
don't
the Western
steal it on first take.
Yes.
Don't steal it on first take tomorrow, Max. This is my question. You can't steal it.
In the Western Conference, yes. In the Western Conference, I thought the Lakers and Clippers would meet in the Western Conference Finals. I still think that's what's going to happen. Now, I will say that maybe Utah and Denver wouldn't have been the classic it was, because who was it who made this point? Others have made it too, but I thought he made it very well. It was Ryan Hollins, who on this show said that the environment in the bubble is conducive to those kind of shootouts because of the lack of depth. The flatter depth gives shooters a better look, right? And so you have, and because of the no travel, you're also going to have fresher shooters. And so maybe the kind of quality of the offense wouldn't have been what it was in that Denver-Utah series, for example. But in the Western Conference, I think it would have played out the same way. And in the Eastern Conference, once Ben Simmons got hurt, they weren't going to do anything. Well, you know, that team was flawed anyway, but maybe the talent could have overcome it. But with Ben Simmons hurt, they weren't going to do anything. And Miami, I think, just caught fire. Now, the one thing in the East that you have to wonder, because Budenholzer and Giannis and then the supporting cast, too, are coming under fire. Budenholzer, you can win 60 games with Atlanta, you get swept in the playoffs. Then you go to a place where you have a superstar. Well, Atlanta didn't have a superstar, but you do in Milwaukee because Giannis is one. And it looks like you're rolling right along, and then you lose four straight after being up 2-0. On the Raptors. And now the next postseason, you get rolled again. Like, what's going on? Why are you going out sort of without a fight in the playoffs? So he's under fire. And Giannis is under fire. You know what? You're going out soft in these playoffs. How does this happen? The MVP in the regular season looks so vulnerable in the playoffs. And then his supporting cast. Well, you guys can ball in the regular season, but not the playoffs. However, in the Bucks' case, I don't know if it's the bubble or what, but certainly the work stoppage, right, because of COVID, seemed to affect them. They went from almost never losing to really hard not winning very much, you know, not just in the playoffs, even before the playoffs in the bubble. So that's the one team I can look at and wonder about. But given what transpired, I think I would have liked the Heat in retrospect anyway.
That's some Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. If I gave you, if you win the life lottery, I now make you the owner of the Bucks. You keeping Budenholzer?
Yeah, for now I am, because the real issue with the Bucks is not, and I said this on Friday, and I was going to say it on First Take, but technical difficulties knocked me off of First Take that day. But I said it on this show, on the Max Kellerman Show on the radio, and I mentioned it again on Tuesday when Richard Jefferson said that Giannis is really Pippen, he needs his Jordan. I disagree. I think Giannis is really Shaq, and he needs his Kobe, because the history of the league, but particularly nowadays, the way it really favors ball handlers now and wings more than ever above bigs. It used to be you wouldn't trade anything for a dominant big. But the history of the league even back then is if you have Shaq, you can't just have Penny. You'll make a finals because Shaq's even better than he was better than Giannis is now. You'll make a finals. But even someone as great as Penny Hardaway and a good crew, Horace Grant and all these guys, you ain't going to win a championship. Even with Shaq and Penny, you need Kobe freaking Bryant in his prime. And by the way, some of those championships were touch and go. There was only one real dominant season where they rolled through everyone. You need Dwayne Wade in his prime to pair with Shaq if you want to win a championship. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar didn't get anything without Oscar Robertson or Magic Johnson. To win a championship, you need the greatest point guard of all time. If you're Kareem Abdul-freaking-Jabbar, the greatest ever, and then when that guy got, then the next greatest ever to win a championship. So Giannis is, I don't look at Budenholzer first. I look at the cheap owners first who didn't want to pay Brogdon, who now are going to have a problem matching up salaries to bring in another superstar to pair with Giannis without really gutting their team. Right? Because the superstars cost a lot to match the salaries. You need high salary players on your team, but these cheap guys didn't want to pay the luxury tax. And so the number one priority has to be, you got to look at ownership and you got to tell them, okay, you can't just bring in a star. A star is not good enough. You need to bring in a wing or a ball handler who's as good as Giannis. Like, as good as he is for a big, because he's really a big, we see that in the playoffs. He's a big dressed up as a wing in the regular season. You need to bring in a superstar. Chris Paul may not be enough. Paul George, not enough. A superstar. Go find that guy. Go look at Devin Booker, right? An ascending, unstoppable force. Put that guy with Giannis. And now you have a chance to win a championship. Because unless you do that in the NBA, you don't even have a chance.
There are two things I'm certain of. One, we're going to talk to Max a little later in his show about some NFL action. And two, I expect the update on what you're actually tailgate grilling for the day. Because I'm convinced you're sitting back, eating some snacks, getting ready for the game. Max, appreciate you hanging out with us.
That's true, but that's not mutually exclusive with technical difficulties.
That is a fair point. Max, we appreciate
it. And now that I know Fitz is on tap, this might be happening once a week. I don't know.
You know, we'll just see where the magic goes. I'll just bring a grill in with me next time. Max, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you in a little bit, my friend.
Thanks, brother.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
It's the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and of course, on your smart speakers. I'm Jason Fitz, in for Max. Max is having some technical difficulties. Shameless plug, I happen to be in the building because I'm hosting College Football Live on ESPN2 later this afternoon. So they say, can you come in? So, yeah, thank you very much. You'll find there's a lot of that. Also, while we're doing that, Spain and Fitz, you can listen to from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. So, if you like hanging out with me, you can hang out there. So, obviously, you can hang out with us also by calling 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can tweet me, at Jason Fitz. We'll get interactive. We'll have some fun. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And going to head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line because it is the first day of the NFL season. I am irregularly excited. I didn't know I was going to be on ESPN News. I am shamelessly wearing my Tecmo Bowl Raiders shirt. I am all in on the NFL season. That means we got to talk to Marcus Spears, my guy. Marcus, happy. Like, I don't even know how to say this. Like, the first day of season, happy NFL season. If you were here and we could, I would hug you and I would try to slow dance with you in the halls of Bristol. I'm that excited.
Whoa.
I know.
Whoa.
I know. Is that?
I am too, Fitz. I ain't gonna lie. We'll probably do a quick little cut or rug. Man, I'm excited, man. Like, listen, it's been a long road to get here, and obviously it's still a long road to go. And it's still things that we have to make sure we're paying attention to, managing, keeping in perspective as these guys take the field, the sacrifices that these particular players are making. I don't want that to get lost in the excitement. Like, these guys obviously are going out to do their craft and be professionals and do all of that, but they are managing risk as well. And as excited as I am about the season, I still want to make sure people understand that these guys feel that they have a responsibility not only to make sure they get their checks, but also they got a responsibility to the game and to the fans that love this game. So we should feel this way, but we also got to realize that these guys are, you know, they are taking risks to go out and play football in a time where we're dealing with a pandemic, social injustice, all of the things that are transpiring. We get football, which has been a healer, a catalyst for people coming together, a catalyst for statements being able to be made on a grand scale. I'm excited as hell, Fitz.
You can obviously watch Marcus Spears on NFL Live every single day, doing great work there on the new show. Love it. And obviously, tonight's matchup gives us two of the best young quarterbacks in the league in Mahomes versus Watson. Marcus, I can't figure out why the Texans haven't been better for the last several years, given how good their quarterback is. Where's it gone wrong for Houston?
Man, they you know, obviously sustained some injuries. J.J. Watt being out for a couple of seasons has definitely not helped them. And then, man, they just – listen, I'm trying to believe in Bill O'Brien. I'm trying, man. And, look, you're a playoff coach. You go to the playoffs. You have a 24-0 lead, and then you lose 51-31. And what am I going to point to outside of coaching? Now you traded away DeAndre Hopkins in your role as general manager. Are you prepared – to have success and for Deshaun to be in the best possible situation with the receiving core that he has when you get rid of a top three guy? I harken back to coaching, man. Obviously they've taken some tough as injuries that have come along. At times Houston has looked as good as anybody in the league. And then there are times where you like, what happened to that team that played 7 days ago? So I think that's it, man. Deshaun is phenomenal. Deshaun, arguably a top five quarterback in this league. He's compensated now like one. The team believes they can win because he's under center. And I'm going to tell you, Fitz, from my 9 years experience of playing, when you have a quarterback, you feel like you got a chance. So that's where Houston is. As long as Bill O'Brien doesn't hold him back, and he actually adds to what Deshaun Watson is doing, as opposed to Deshaun Watson hiding some things that he needs to do better.
I'm just saying, it keeps hitting me, Marcus, that any other team with a GM and a coach that had wasted a talent as great as, and I don't mean wasted it, that they haven't had any success, but there's a presumption for most teams when your young quarterback's as good as Deshaun is that you're going to do great things. So I'm just asking for the same level of accountability to Bill O'Brien anybody else would have. Now, you mentioned...
Well, man, listen. Go ahead. Listen, Fitz, you let the Titans come up and make a run last year. You let Indianapolis now got Phillip Rivers. Like, it was your opportunity to win your conference, your division. Last year was the opportunity to win it and then go forward and try to make a run at the thing. And look, I'm sitting here as a Dallas Cowboy fan, okay, as an analyst that tries to be non-biased, but when it comes to Cowboys, I get a bit emotional, as people know, all right? Who didn't make the playoffs last year when Carson Wentz was playing with junior college receivers. They beat them to keep them out of the playoffs. So this is me talking about the Texans, who actually made the playoffs, who had a 24-0 lead on the Super Bowl champions, right? So it's not a far-fetched idea that they have made good decisions and can continue to get better. They have good players on their roster. I just am intrigued to see how they go forward when you trade away a game changer. And not only that, Brandon Cooks was questionable. It seems like he's going to play. But is Brandon Cooks going to be a guy to step into the number one role? Will it be Will Fuller? He's been injured quite a bit. Just got to see, man. I mean, listen, it is a head scratcher. But at the same time, when you look at everything in totality, as good as they drafted before Bill O'Brien and some of those players are still there, what he's done roster-wise, you bring in David Johnson on a trade for DeAndre Hopkins. Man, they better be good, or he might be staring at his way out there.
He's Marcus Spears hanging out with us on the show, Penzo Performance Line. You can hang out with him today and every day on NFL Live, doing great work there. Marcus, man, I appreciate you. And that's why you're a professional. You at least hide the Cowboys stuff a little bit compared to me and my beloved Raiders. I can't promise you I'm not going to every Sunday text you what the heck just happened, but at least you know you love it about me, right? We'll just go with that.
Man, look, hopefully Gruden can get that thing going. Y'all got a great one in Josh Jacobs. Carr might be able to turn it around. We'll see what – I want to see the defense. I want to see Arden Key. I want to see Cleveland Farrell get after the quarterback this year. That's what I want to see from the Raiders. And another thing, too, Fitz, how in the hell does Max Kellerman make all that money and not have Wi-Fi?
I don't know, man. I'm too low on the totem pole to ask the tough questions. Marcus, get out of here. We appreciate Marcus Spears hanging out. Look, that was better than Santa Claus and Christmas Day. Like, he just gave me a little bit of hope. Marcus is not ready for the way I will act on this campus if the Raiders are any good this year. Oh, I just get goosebumps thinking about it.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. And, of course, on your smart speakers. Max having some technical issues today. I'm Jason Fitz, so I'm pinch-hitting for him. We will talk to Max in just a few minutes. He's going to join us each hour, and we'll get to hang out and get some of his thoughts on everything. You guys can reach us, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Don't forget, Job Well Done, brought to you by Napa. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts, Napa Auto Care, or visit Napa online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa know-how. I know how we're going to get into the season. What I don't know is what we're expecting. So we're going to let Raj chime in. Raj, you got some takes here. You got some questions you're going to ask. I'm going to answer.
Yeah, Fitz, I got some questions, man. We're going to center around the quarterback position, mainly young quarterbacks. All right, let's start it off with the MVP. I'm going to give you two names to choose from. Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson, man. Who you got?
Here's the thing. You can't stop a hype train when it runs as fast as it's running. You only needed to give me one name. I mean, there's a reason the Golic and Wingo used to call him future Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes. And let me be clear, it's difficult to say this because I am wearing a Tech Mobile Raiders shirt as I do it. Patrick Mahomes is clearly the best player in the NFL by what feels like a mile, and he's got so much love right now. I can't imagine anybody but Patty Mahomes. I like to call him Patty. We're good like that. Patty is going to be the MVP of the NFL this year as he hoists another Super Bowl trophy.
Okay, fair enough. All right, now here's one. Let's focus on these young ones. Not all young ones, a little bit older, but the first quarterback to be benched during the 2020 season will be, and I'm going to give you four names.
Okay.
Dwayne Haskins, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Mitch Trubisky, or Sam Darnold? Which one's going to be benched first, Fitz?
Well, you can always hear Sarah Spain with Mitch Trubisky takes, the Bears fan, on Spain and Fitz, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. But the only way that Mitch got in was because of the love, obviously, that Nagy has for him or Ryan Pace. Somebody in that organization has decided that Mitch is the answer. If they started him to start the season, I think it takes something absolutely awful for him to be benched. So Trubisky's in. Darnold is in because that's the only hope the Jets have. So then it becomes really about Haskins or Fitzpatrick. If I knew fully how healthy Alex Smith is, I would have maybe a different thought on this. But I'm going to go with Fitzpatrick because Tua Tagovailoa, I think, has the opportunity to be not only their future, we know that, but I think he has the opportunity to be really special. So I don't fault a team with the limited offseason for waiting to get a quarterback in when they're a rookie. So I have no problem waiting for Tua to get a little bit more familiarity with the game, but I think he's going to eventually replace Ryan Fitzpatrick, mostly also because Fitzpatrick keeps using the last name Fitz when it's just Fitz, not Fitzpatrick. So he should just be Fitz Pete. That's all I'm saying.
All right, we'll get to more Tua in a second here, but first, second-year quarterbacks here, okay? Which second-year quarterback will win more games? Here are your choices. Danny Dimes or Daniel Jones, depending on what you like to refer to him as. Kyler Murray, who has a new weapon, obviously, or Drew Lock.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to go Drew Lock. My God. I mean, he plays for the Broncos, so he's out right there. See, Marcus Spears earlier is professional. I'm not. I'm out on Drew Lock. I think Kyler Murray, I'm still interested to see how that offense grows in year two. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Danny Dimes, Daniel Jones. That's wow. Where I am. Yeah, it's a surprising pick. I think the Giants are going to be a little better. Like, they're not going to be the total dumpster fire most people think this year.
All right, last one. You spoke of him earlier, Tua. Let me ask you this. I think you already answered it, but let's ask anyway. How many starts will Tua make? Over, under, 8.5?
Oh, man. The reason over under is so difficult is because they're usually spot on. I think 8's about right. But I would say under. I think that this year is going to take a lot longer for young players to get their groove. So I think that Fitzpatrick gets in for more than half the games. That's my thought moving in. Ross, those were good questions, man. I'm jotting them down. You were rolling. By the way, speaking of quarterbacks, I just got to remind everybody, if your young quarterback stinks, your young rookie stinks week one, it's not the end of the world. They had no practice time. They got no preseason games. It's going to take time, people. That's all I'm saying, is going to take time.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.